You know, the number of car accidents that are caused, the number of broken relationships, the number of, you know, health
That's
problems,
true.
The number of cancer.
That's true.
Alcohol is by far number one. Hi everyone, Dr. Guo from Peak Human Labs, and today we're going to be talking about the science behind alcohol use and the impact on your brain, your body. It's a dry January.
It's a dry January. I have a poll going on right now to see if who's participating in dry January, and that was part of the motivation for this because I am.
Yeah, and so are many other, I guess.
Yes.
Millions of people probably across North America, I'm sure. So it's very timely.
Yes, it is.
So let's go through some of that science together because hopefully this can help give you some motivation for staying dry through January, maybe February, March, let's see.
Yeah, let's see. You know, because they always say, drink responsibly, but even responsible drinking, as I'm hoping to hear from you, mm-hmm. like a few drinks a week, a lot of times people think that doesn't have any kind of impact.
Yeah.
But you're going to tell us if it does or doesn't,
well,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, like traditionally we've always been told like taking one or two drinks a day is actually healthy for you. Like that is.
I've heard a red glass of wine. I've heard they said that is good for us, exactly. Or not bad.
Yeah, it's right? actually been told that it was healthy, and that really came from data, like studies where they looked at, you know, millions of people, and they were able to find that, you know, people who drank about two drinks per day actually, you know, lived longer and had, you know, better health outcomes than those who didn't drink at all or those who drank excessively. So there was kind of this thinking that there was a
sweet spot. Was that a recent survey?
No, this has been
a while ago.
10, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, so even up to until, you know, last year, there was a big meta-analysis of where they looked at 4.8 million people, and they basically showed that there was no benefit to not drinking less than two drinks a day.
All right, no more dry January.
But then there's a lot of confusion on this because
right.
there have been conflicting studies which show even a little bit of alcohol is, you know, can be harmful.
So, yeah, that's what I was under that pretense because I know that some people can't, they're allergic, like they're even allergic to alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
There's something in the alcohol that, you know, causes the body to have some adverse effects. So mm-hmm. can we start maybe with what is in alcohol or what is alcohol? Like what do you constitute as a drink?
Yeah, so alcohol is, basically it's ethanol.
Mm-hmm.
And ethanol is metabolized by your liver.
Okay.
By a couple of enzymes. The most well-known enzyme is alcohol dehydrogenase.
Okay.
So this enzyme, you know, people have different versions of this enzyme. So you could have an enzyme which is more active, and some people have an enzyme that's less active. Which
like in our individual bodies?
Yeah, based on our genetics.
Okay.
Some people are born with, you know, faster enzymes. Some people are born with slower enzymes. So that's one enzyme. And the other enzyme that's important is it's called the P450 system of the liver.
And the liver. I've never heard of that. P450 system of the liver? Okay.
Yeah, so the P450 system of the liver detoxifies so many different chemicals and molecules in the body. So that's why the liver is considered the detox organ.
Right.
So in this, it has so many different enzymes, of which one of the enzymes is called the CYP2E1. So this enzyme, we'll put it in the notes, but this enzyme specifically is about metabolizing alcohol. So, and this enzyme also has a number of different, we call polymorphisms, means that different people have different strength or activity of that enzyme. They're born with it. So your genetic makeup has a lot of determination of how you're gonna metabolize alcohol.
Yeah, I've heard that different people's DNA or genetics mm-hmm. are correlated to how alcohol affects them, both in their, you know, brain, and well, we're talking about brain, body, and then our behavior, right? Because how alcohol affects us is going to determine, like, how we, I guess, behave and things of that nature.
Yeah, but the genetics part, first one we're talking about here is metabolism.
Right.
So just how do you metabolize alcohol is based on your genetics.
Got it.
Okay, some people are fast metabolizers, some people are slow metabolizers, and that's influenced by your genetics. And also, if you end up, if you're like a regular drinker, your body will speed up its metabolism. It'll make those enzymes more active.
So it's because we're giving alcohol to our body, it is creating more of that enzyme?
Yes, your body kind of responds to know to ramp up the... Ramp up the metabolism. So that's why somebody who's like a regular drinker, they can handle larger amounts of alcohol before they get drunk. Whereas somebody who hasn't drank alcohol for like 6 months, they're going to hit that first drink's going to really hit them hard.
Yeah, I'm frankly amazed at how some of the people I know can drink enough alcohol that I think could knock out an elephant, but like they can like drink a lot.
So some of it's dependent on, like I said, the alcohol dehydrogenase enzyme. Okay. Some of it's dependent on the P450 enzyme.
Right.
And then some of it's dependent on their body weight. Mm. Larger people, you know, they'll take more alcohol to reach the same concentration in their blood.
Okay.
So there's a number of different factors. It's not so much about how much, you know, alcohol can they hold or stand or whatever. It's more like some of it's built upon their habits and their genetics.
I mean, I'm going to ask you a question as a medical doctor. I mean, I would assume dry January would be a good thing for people to take on or practice, like trying to completely eliminate alcohol?
Well, yeah, I think that we're going to talk about the effects of alcohol on the body. And I think so generally, probably alcohol is not safe in any amounts.
Okay.
I mean, probably. I mean, let's go through that
little
bit further.
Yeah, sure. Okay, perfect.
One of the things, I think I'd done a talk on the blue zones in the past, and what, you know, this whole idea about alcohol being a healthy part of the diet, a small, at least moderate amounts of alcohol, comes from Europe and where people have the Mediterranean diet, and where taking one or two glasses of wine was considered a healthy thing.
So within the Mediterranean diet, alcohol is included in that?
Yeah, it's kind of like part of their lifestyle.
Got it.
And so when they looked at this specific place called Sardinia, where it's one of the blue zones where people live a long time, and they had postulated that because these people were drinking like a specific type of red wine, this red wine was very high in flavonoids. Flavonoids are these super antioxidants. And resveratrol, which is another one of these super nutraceuticals, like you hear about a lot, is found in red wine.
Okay.
So the idea was that perhaps it's these types of super antioxidants that are sitting in red wine that's giving this benefit to drinking alcohol.
Right. But again, it's within moderation. That's the difference.
Yeah.
Right?
But even this idea about two drinks a day was built around this idea that, hey, you know what? There's probably some good benefit because there's these flavonoids in this.
Sure.
But there are some caveats here in that they've looked at these now, these populations, and they've seen that even the places where they were not, where they're drinking the same amount of this special red wine alcohol, where there's lots of flavonoids, people did not live so long. So it's the idea that people were living really long in this particular area of Sardinia due to the alcohol doesn't really make sense.
So there must have been another factor. Ruled out that alcohol was actually contributing to the longevity.
Exactly, because we have other blue zones where people do not drink.
Okay.
Like the Seventh-day Adventists in California do not drink at all.
Right.
And they have very long lifespans. So it may not be the alcohol. It may be that one or two drinks does not play such a big role. It may be that the counter other aspects, the social activity of being drinking with somebody and having the positive social relationships, that has a protective effect and so that one or two drinks doesn't make such a big difference because you're having so much positive of being low stressed and happy and having a good time with your friends that outweighs any risks of the one or two drinks.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you've heard, and people will literally say this because alcohol is so normalized that people forget that, again, it's a poison for some people. Like they actually equate alcohol to being a poison, right? Why is that? Would you classify it as a poison?
Well, it kind of makes sense because alcohol is metabolized to acetaldehyde, which is a carcinogen, a known carcinogen.
Okay.
And then another enzyme converts it to acetate, which is safe.
Sounds bad.
But that middle metabolite is actually a carcinogen. So that's why alcohol use is linked to a number of different cancers.
I was just going to say, carcinogen and cancer like synonymous to each other?
I think there's about seven different cancers for which alcohol is related to.
They have a, like, they've directly correlated.
Yes, it's right here.
Right.
So basically what they've, yeah, alcohol is a potent carcinogen, and basically alcohol contributes more than 75,000 cases of cancer per year, and nearly causes nearly 19,000 cancer deaths per year. So it's
from alcohol itself.
So yes, we know about smoking and cancer.
Wow.
But alcohol is a direct cause of 7 different cancers, head and neck cancers, so or mouth. Because again, the alcohol is touching the mouth mucosa, the pharynx. Yeah,
this is new to me. I have never ever heard a correlation between drinking alcohol to. I've heard liver disease.
Well, liver cancer.
I didn't know liver cancer,
yes.
And then organ failure. Right, once your liver's can't metabolize and all of that good stuff, then nothing else, like everything else starts to deteriorate.
Right.
Right, but I did not know that about cancer. That's like...
So basically 7 different cancers, alcohol can cause, a direct cause of head and neck cancers, or that's oral cavity, pharynx and larynx, esophageal cancer, so that's pipe. So again, just think about where the alcohol has to go. It has to go down this pipe, so it's going to irritate the mucosa of your pipe. Then liver cancer.
Okay.
Breast cancer and colorectal cancer.
So let me ask you, would that have been in that? I don't know if you have the data on that or while you were doing your research.
Yeah.
Was that only for people who were excessively drinking, or could that have been even with people who moderately drank 2-3 times a day?
Just it looks like
they were consuming alcohol.
It looks like it's in a little bit of a
larger consumption.
Consumption, yeah. I mean,
but alcohol was the impact, so that's what we're talking
clearly
about.
Was it. And they have some. Perhaps some less clear-cut link between alcohol use and prostate cancer and pancreatic cancer.
Okay, but those other ones were pretty obvious.
Yeah, but the 7 are clear-cut. So somebody drinks less, they're definitely a lower risk to somebody who is a heavy drinker. But even at 1 or 2 drinks per day, there's a small risk of cancer compared to a non-drinker.
Gotcha.
So there's still a small risk, but it's, you know, it's...
So what would pose the greatest risk then?
Oh, I think, again, it's probably a linear relationship. Means that if you are increasing your alcohol use, you're going to have increased risk of cancer.
Wow.
In various organs. So I think that's...
Well, I'm so glad that I decided to give my liver a break.
You asked
for 75 days.
What's the biggest risk?
Yeah.
Is alcoholic liver disease. This is what we normally talk about. And so how does this happen? Because basically what's happening is that fat starts to accumulate in the liver. And we talked about fatty liver previously.
Yes, we did talk about fatty liver disease, yes.
And so when fat starts to accumulate in the liver, inflammation also starts to form around the fat. And enzymes, cells start to get damaged. And when inflammation happens, then we start to have scarring.
Okay.
And fibrosis. Fibrosis means like it gets the...
Hardening. Yeah.
And when that happens, that's alcoholic cirrhosis. Cirrhosis means that the liver has become hard and is not functioning anymore. These cells are not detoxifying and they're not doing their job.
It's like a dead... It becomes...
It's a dead organ.
It looks like this
like
piece of... Yeah,
paper.
Exactly.
Exactly.
So what about genetic makeup then? How much of that is impacted?
Yeah, for sure that, like I was mentioning before, is that... Your genetic makeup will tell you how you metabolize alcohol. So if you are somebody who can potentially metabolize quicker, then you can metabolize acetaldehyde quickly and have less risk. But for example, in Asian people of Asian descent, there are 2 genetic variants where they don't metabolize as quickly, and other ones where it metabolizes much faster. Imagine if you metabolize the first one much quicker, you're going to have a lot of acetaldehyde around, which is a toxin.
Right.
Which then contributes to having more of this carcinogen around your body.
And then cancer.
And then let's say if they don't have the second enzyme to get rid of this carcinogen, which makes it safe, so this is where it's not so complex about one particular gene. It's like the whole flow.
So we kind of skipped over like actual alcoholism and addiction, right? And I know you wanted to share something about the impact on the heart and the brain. That's what we're actually talking about. But what is it in the alcohol that is so addictive that people literally cannot stop? And people die from alcoholism. Mm-hmm. Do you know what it is that they're addicted to?
So when we talk about addiction, there are different types of addiction. Some people have what we call a psychological, and we use the word dependence, actually.
Okay, dependence.
So dependence.
As a physician, you use dependence?
Yeah, we use the word dependence means
okay.
Or tolerance.
Okay.
So basically what happens is that there's a psychological dependence. It means that alcohol kind of creates this feeling. It makes you more relaxed, mm-hmm. kind of like the disinhibition that you feel with alcohol.
Or the lack of inhibition.
Yeah,
the inhibition. Yeah, exactly.
You feel better, you're more relaxed, you're happier. Like, at least in the moment, you feel happier.
Right.
So people have that psychological dependence on that feeling, and it's kind of an escape. So that's one way. What's one reason why people develop this habit of regular drinking?
Now that you think
of
it, it's
also, it sometimes helps you go to sleep.
Right.
Sometimes you want to get away and relax and it helps you go to sleep. So that's one thing. The second thing is that it also has a physiological dependence it creates.
Okay.
So it
stimulates. So this one's body, like when people go through withdrawal, they have
that's
these.
That's called a physiological.
Okay.
They're dealing with the physiological dependence. So, for example, alcohol stimulates what we call the GABA receptors. These are the receptors that make you relaxed. So that's why alcohol makes you relaxed, because mm-hmm. it stimulates the same receptors as, let's say, a sleeping pill does.
So GABA receptors, are they GABA?
Yeah,
they in the brain?
GABA, yeah. It's a GABA receptors in the brain, which basically, when you stimulate them, your brain gets more relaxed. So it helps with anxiety. So when people start to stimulate those receptors, they feel great. But as soon as you take it away, you're going to start to feel anxious.
Right.
You're going to feel unwell. You're going to feel like...
Even more paranoid,
like
or even
really
more
anxiety.
Like you
that feeling of
back.
Relaxation back.
Okay.
Because the GABA receptors, you like that feeling. That's why sleeping pills are also
addictive.
Dependence.
Okay.
So any type of time that you get into you're stimulating these type of receptors, your brain wants to get back to that good feeling. And so that's called physiological dependence. So alcohol is one of those things which has a psychological dependence.
And physiological. So it's a double whammy.
Yeah, so that's why
it can be really challenging for people to stop, right?
Exactly.
It's not that easy.
Yeah,
okay.
That's exactly right.
So what are the heart impacts? You were going to talk about that.
Yeah, we do know that, again, we had thought that there was potentially some benefits for the heart with drinking a small amount of alcohol, perhaps. But we do know that definitely drinking larger amounts increases your blood pressure.
Yes.
Increased your blood pressure?
Yeah, because when my dad was alive, he was not allowed to drink. We did a high blood pressure thing. I had to check my pressure.
Yeah.
And I didn't even correlate that, Sanjeev, that my increased alcohol intake, because I was very social, and by increased alcohol, I'm saying 2-3 times a week, I would drink with clients, by myself, like glass of wine, or two, tequila all summer, it was terrible. And then my blood pressure spiked.
Right.
I'm sure there were other factors, but how does blood pressure and alcohol relate?
Well, it's probably stimulating the nervous system to get the vessels to become tighter.
Okay.
So, because you're not, stress hormones are being released and the pipes are becoming stiffer.
Okay.
So it's leading to increased blood pressure. We also know that there's a heart disease also caused by alcohol, where the heart actually gets damaged by too much alcohol. And it can also cause something called atrial fibrillation, which is a rhythm disturbance, where the heart is not beating properly.
So almost like a murmur, but even
worse. It's called atrial fibrillation. Yeah, it means it's irregular heartbeat.
Irregular heartbeat,
and that
okay.
can lead to blood clots in the brain and stroke. So it has a lot of problems. It also can cause weight gain because alcohol has empty calories. And just like I was mentioning with alcoholic liver disease, is that it basically leads to fat being deposited in your liver.
So on the weight gain thing, when people talk about a beer belly, and you can see a beer belly. On some men, you see this just like round, like it is literally all in the front. Why does the beer gut look so big like that? No, seriously, why is it all up in the front like that? A physician.
Men will put more weight on their tummy.
It's so prominent.
It's called a beer gut, but any type of extra calories on a man will generally come around the tummy. That's what we call, in women it'll be more on the butt. But as, and that's, and this is much more dangerous.
I know.
Well, central adiposity is much more dangerous.
So central adiposity, meaning the collection of fat in
one
area.
Around the central area.
Okay.
Your stomach is a big risk factor for heart disease and, you know.
When I see men walking around and or at the ball game or at the hockey game, and they're like big beer, I'm just thinking, oh my God, that's a heart attack. Like, I just automatically think it looks unhealthy.
Yeah, I think we call it beer gut or beer bellies, whatever, but it really means that it's a full lifestyle thing. Like,
yes.
they're drinking alcohol, and they're having a hot dog, and they're not exercising, and they may be smoking,
yeah.
and the whole thing, and they're not moving. So I think
Ooh.
All of that's tied together.
Yeah, yeah.
We call it a beer gut because those people generally group into those things together.
It's a poor lifestyle.
It's like when
gut,
you go to watch a
right?
baseball game and you have a couple of beers
yeah.
and you're sitting there for 3 hours and
yeah,
that's
exactly.
going to lead to a beer gut if you do that every day.
Now, what about right. the bulbous nose? Do you know more about that? Like, they, I don't know if you know. Like,
well,
there's people
acne
who have these...
rosacea.
Okay, is that also?
It's a type of, you know, some people, the blood vessels dilate on the nose.
Okay.
And cause a kind of a redness. Red nose.
Well, when I drink alcohol and a lot of it, my face is red. Like, I
yeah,
feel flushed
it
everywhere.
Happen,
why do I, why does the
Asians,
body heat?
It's a certain Asian.
Oh, is my genes?
Certain, you may have a certain genetic
okay.
disposition that again, metabolism issue, where for you, that's what happens. It's the flushing that happens.
Do you know much about blackouts?
I've never specifically
never researched, okay.
But I mean, it's a question again.
Could it be just like my brain had, like my tank is full and it just, well, on the brain, there's short-term memory. Apparently there's some.
If you drink enough alcohol, you'll black out.
Got you. Talked about not drinking at all. And what about binge drinking? What exactly is binge drinking? And is binge drinking is separate from alcoholism, right? So what is the difference?
What we call binge drinking disorder. So there are, you know, people,
it's an actual disorder.
Well,
okay.
we give it to almost everything, but so there's, you know, alcoholism is a very wide term. It just means one who's drinking enough alcohol that is starting to interfere with their daily function. So anytime that's starting to happen. So if you ask a person, you know, we have something called the CAGE questionnaire.
Okay.
Like, this is how we ask people, you know, do they have alcohol?
Oh, in
problem?
Your office.
Yeah, generally.
Okay, generally,
medical
okay.
Medical doctors ask people to figure out, okay, do they have an alcohol
I'll
problem?
I'll take the survey.
The first question is, do you ever feel like you got to cut down?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's plus one.
Okay.
Second one is, do other people get annoyed by you
Yes.
drinking? That's number two. This is positive.
Yes. Keep
number
going.
Number three, do you ever feel guilty?
Yes.
Okay, and then...
I'm failing. I don't want to pass this test. Are you listening to this? Yes. Okay, go ahead.
And then number four is, do you ever have an eye-opener?
Yes.
Okay, so that's all four. So that means you have an alcohol problem.
I did.
Yeah.
No, I do.
Yeah, when you're,
I mean...
Yeah, I mean, when you're drinking.
That's why I... yes.
So there
oh
you
my
go.
God.
So
why didn't you ask me these questions before? Yeah, that's a challenge.
So basically... So binge drinking is sometimes a little different because one can be totally dry, like, you know, Monday to Friday, and then have like 10 drinks on Saturday, Sunday, and that's called a binge drinking disorder, and that's still a problem. That may not be the same problem as the person who's drinking every
day.
Yes. But it's still gonna have health problems. That's why if you know, this whole idea of drinking one or two drinks, people think, oh, you know what, I'm just going to save up my drinks for Saturday, and I'm going to not drink from Monday to Friday.
I do that!
But you can't do that, because yeah. the effect is actually
it's
worse.
It's actually, yes.
It's because if you drink a little bit, just like I said, your body kind of has the ability to handle it, and doesn't allow so much of the levels to go so high. It kind of detoxifies it as time
yes.
is going on. But if you, like, drink 10 drinks at once, and you haven't drank from Monday to Friday, it's a big shock to the system.
So shocking that I don't remember the night before. And then I'm,
right. yeah.
I asked that question because I felt like that's why I was interested in this conversation and why I took on Dry January, February, March, mm-hmm. 3 months, 75 days, mm-hmm. is I noticed that alcohol for me on my frame, because it's also based on your body type,
body weight, yeah.
how much you can drink.
Yes.
I clearly don't have a great tolerance. Like, I think I do, but I don't. I like the taste, but I don't like the impact. So unfortunately with alcohol, and this is they call them, when you're drinking, it's a creeper, right? You're drinking those drinks, you think you're okay, and then all of a sudden, like, I'm not okay. I'm not okay in that I feel sick, or I need to like sit down, or I, you know, you get the wobbles, things start to wobble around. So binge drinking, I would imagine you get hit all at once with all those negative things.
Yeah, because you have, you know, your body's not used to it because you haven't been drinking the days before, but it has lost a lot of health problems. You know, some of the things we do see in the office is people develop a gastritis, which means like a stomach irritation, the lining of the stomach gets damaged.
Oh, the next day is terrible.
Pain, this, what we call epigastric pain right here. Yeah. And it can actually lead to an ulcer. People have there's alcoholic gastric ulcers. And that can cause bleeding. And so if you ever had any type of blood in your stools, which dark black stools, that could we call melena, which means it's actually dried blood.
Oh my gosh.
That's an emergency, you need to go to the hospital.
All right, so you know, let's talk about, we were talking about the effects of alcohol, mind, body, physiological. So let's move to the mind a bit, because I know that alcohol has been a coping mechanism and people have turned to alcohol to deal with anxiety. Right. Yet, scientifically, I think there's data that proves that drinking alcohol is actually not going to help your anxiety. So why do people drink alcohol for anxiety?
Yeah, we were talking about how it stimulates these GABA receptors.
Yes.
And anxiety is basically an issue where, you know, there's too much, like just if you want to call it, the pathways are too stimulated and your nervous system is too stimulated. And GABA receptors, GABA is what kind of calms things down. So when we take alcohol, we basically make the anxiety less. So that's how come it's easier to kind of talk to somebody at a party when you're drinking, or like if you need to give a speech.
Yes.
Some people will like take a drink.
We call it liquid courage.
Yeah, okay. Is that right? Okay.
So you want some liquid, and you know what? I've been guilty of saying that. Just have a drink, link with liquid courage, right? So because of that reason.
Yeah, the same thing when people take a Xanax or a Valium. These things have the same effect where they stimulate the GABA receptor and reduce your anxiety. And that's what alcohol does. So there's a lot of people out there who have social anxiety.
Yes.
And alcohol is amazing for that because...
Isn't it incredible how you see... Like, you see it a lot in the movies. You'll see that quiet guy or girl in the corner. You put a few drinks in them, and they're like the alter ego. Woo! What is that?
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening, is that we've helped them reduce that anxiety.
Okay.
And the danger is here is that if...
Because they don't behave that way. Yeah. When they're not drinking alcohol.
Yeah.
So it is mood altering. It's like, what is in the brain that's impacting this decision making?
Yeah, what's happening is that GABA receptors are being stimulated, you're getting more relaxed.
Yes.
But then the problem is that as soon as we take away that alcohol, they're going to have a psychological
impact.
They're going to want to come back to it because it felt so good.
Yes.
And they'll have a physiological reaction where their anxiety will actually increase. They'll actually have rebound anxiety, what we call rebound anxiety.
That doesn't sound good.
Anxiety.
Yeah, like rebound relationships. They don't work.
So the danger here is that when people are using alcohol to medicate, what we call self-medicating.
Ah, okay.
This is the danger. So you have to kind of think at yourself, look at yourself and say, why am I using this alcohol?
Got it.
What is the purpose? Am I trying to medicate an anxiety? Yes, okay, once in a while you want to take one drink to kind of just loosen things up and have a good time, that's fine. But if you're using it regularly to reduce your anxiety, you can get yourself into a big problem because your anxiety can actually become much worse. I've seen people who start developing anxiety disorder, like they start to have panic attacks, which they never have any before because their body's all of a sudden more revved up.
Well, you know, there's feel-good hormones, and I'll name them out loud, like there's the dopamine and serotonin, but then cortisol is a stress hormone, right? Mm-hmm. So when someone's drinking alcohol, do they get a dopamine hit, or does serotonin release, or is it, like, what is it that's causing them all to relax that way? Are those hormones being released while they're drinking?
Well, the GABA receptor.
It's GABA.
GABA is being released, which is great. That people feel relaxed about that. But they're probably having a dopamine hit because that's what feels pleasurable. Every time something good happens, they meet somebody.
Well, it's a reward system. Yeah. So they're probably because
feeling
they
great, feel good.
Yeah.
Like talking to somebody, meeting somebody that's feeling good. The dopamine hit that is happening there.
Yes.
You know, a serotonin, I'm not 100% sure that serotonin is being released.
But then the next day, is cortisol increased?
That's exactly
cortisol spiked?
Cortisol spikes after. Because okay. that's when the stress...
When they're on the down. When they're on the down. When the alcohol's gone.
Then the cortisol spikes up.
Right.
And that's when the blood pressure goes up and you feel unwell and you feel, you know,
And that's the cycle. Because now I want to drink because I'm so stressed.
Because you know
what, like that's what people
you
say.
You know that yeah. the alcohol will fix this. People think that the alcohol
yeah.
is going to... And it does. The funny thing is it actually temporarily
yeah.
does.
Right.
So it becomes a reinforcing cycle.
And I think that's the danger. That's the thing that, and when I was hearing you talk about mm-hmm. you know, doing the cage questionnaire, I'm like,
you're still coming back to the cage
I like anxiety right now. I feel guilty. No, I mean, sometimes it's a lifestyle thing. You're unaware. You haven't done the research. Your blood pressure's up. And then it's January and you're like, I need to change my lifestyle. It's about awareness. And I love this conversation because a lot of people relate, like they think they need to have it, right? And I had a very close friend of mine who did the 12-step program, was clean for a year. And yeah. this is somebody who I thought I would never ever see him at a party sober. And not have a substance to get him to enjoy life. But when I saw him enjoying life and people and, like, it didn't need alcohol. I think he psychologically thought that he needed it. But when you understand that you don't need it, mm-hmm. right,
There are other ways to get yeah. to the same point.
Right.
There are other ways to get that kind of feeling good feeling.
Can we talk about those ways that for people who might be struggling or maybe want to try on Dry January, where they don't just automatically default to drinking alcohol? What are some of the coping yeah. things?
Well, I think the first step is that is making sure other people around you know that you're trying to cut down.
Right.
You know, that's very helpful because
be happy to hear that you are.
Yeah, if you have other people's support, you can see that most people, when they're trying to cut down, need a support system.
Right.
So it's really important to let other people know, hey, you know, I'm trying to cut down and where I'm doing.
So accountability will help.
Dry January is
yes.
really important because then what happens is that you don't have that kind of peer pressure. Mm-hmm. If they're your friends, they're not going to put you in a situation where,
if they're your real yeah, friends,
they're not,
yes.
You're not drinking, what type of loser are you? No, like, that's not helpful.
Right,
that's
no.
That's not a helpful situation.
Never say that to me.
That's what I would say is first step is, you know, enlist the support of people around you and make sure they're on board and they're going to be supportive because this is it's not as like this.
Yes.
It's a habit and behavior that needs to be changed.
Right.
So that's one thing. Second thing is that if you are going to have a drink, try to make those drinks less frequent, mm-hmm. less amount, and less frequent. So what you could do is have a drink, not every day.
Yeah.
If you're deciding to have a drink, maybe make half a shot, or maybe don't even have shots. Make them, you know, drinks with you're mixing in with something else.
Yes.
And then so that way you can have it slower. I think people get into a problem when they're taking shots and things like that because it's very easy to consume huge amounts of alcohol
mm-hmm.
at that time. So again, think about what's the best way to kind of take slow amount of alcohol so that you're not causing that type of problem and space it out. So it could be, you know, once every 1 hour or 2 hours you're having a drink. So it's not causing such an issue.
You know what? That just brought up a point that because people who have known me to enjoy my drinking would say, after having a drink, have a glass of water. Like, have your drink, but have a glass of water before you have another drink. Because I would have a drink and then have another drink and have another drink and not have water because water can help dilute the alcohol, right? And then I'm more full. But if I'm drinking like it's water, then it becomes problematic, you know?
No, it's also going to prevent the hangover from happening.
Another
reason
good.
Why you should be drinking water, as much water as you can.
And so if we did have a hangover, what are some supplementation, natural remedies? What's a cure for that?
I don't think there's any particular one thing that works, but a lot of these hangover-like aids that you see out there...
Do they work?
They all have, like, B-complex in them.
Okay.
So B-complex, some magnesium
okay.
would be very helpful.
Yep.
And if you want to support your liver, then something called NAC, which is N-acetylcysteine, which is helps to detox your liver.
NAC.
And glutathione. Glutathione you can also get in supplement form.
The drip. Vitamin drip.
Yeah,
would that not help?
It's possible.
I mean, I came to you before I knew I was going, because that's also preventative. If you are saying drink a lot of water prior, mm-hmm. or do a vitamin drip before for hydration.
Or after.
Or after. Yeah. So if you do it before, it's kind of preventative. If you do it after, you're just replenishing.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. It's going to help speed up the metabolism, getting rid of the alcohol out of your body.
Does alcohol have I heard it's a diuretic effect, or does it have caffeine in it?
No, there's no caffeine.
There's no caffeine.
It is diuretic. You have to pee it out and
cause dehydration. Some drinks have a lot of sugar. Is that the situation?
That's true.
Okay.
Empty calories.
Empty calories.
Even alcohol itself is a type of sugar.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
That's why fat builds up around the liver.
Okay.
Because there are extra calories the body doesn't know what to do with. And so it stores them around the liver, which causes damage to the liver.
So what, after going through all of this, what would be your best advice or, I guess, guidance to people who, like, what question should they ask themselves? I think they should ask themselves the cage question. If they're 4 out of 4, what's the next step? What do you tell somebody like that?
Yeah, 4 out of 4 is, you know, wake up single, but, you know, there's something going on and... you need to address the alcohol in your life. So definitely that's where you speak to your close friends around you, maybe speak to your doctor, you know, to see what could be the next steps. Probably get a blood test done to check what your liver function is like. That might be motivating. If you see some, you know, liver enzymes are elevated, that's going to help you to kind of get...
That's what I was curious about as well. From a medical side, if somebody is suspecting that they may have... some challenges, or they're curious about knowing their body, if they were to come see a doctor, everyone has, I would assume, a physician. We're in Canada, for those who are in Canada. What test would you recommend? If you were somebody's, would they just do a regular blood test, or would they would do a blood test, a liver test, anything else that you would recommend?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's usually part of a liver test is part of a regular blood test.
Okay.
These liver enzymes are markers of liver cell damage.
Okay.
And you know, most doctors would be quite aware of that. So I think that's generally what I would do. I think the, you know, the question to ask is yourself is that, hey, do you want to continue this way? Because it's, you know, you might be okay for a couple of months of drinking heavy, but over years and years, like I've mentioned, it has many health impacts.
Right.
I mean, it does. We didn't talk too much about the brain, but, you know, alcohol actually damages brain cells.
Okay.
It can lead to dementia. There's a particular type of dementia actually caused by alcohol. So you lose your memory. Okay. Damages many organs in the body, including your liver.
Right.
Which, and people...
is a very... you only have one.
You end up with liver cirrhosis is one of the ways. It can cause 7 different cancers, which we talked about. It leads to a number of different heart problems, including your heart, high blood pressure, stroke, and atrial fibrillation. And then it also is probably depressant.
Yeah.
It means like it has a, apart from the effects on your brain, it actually can make you depressed because, like I said, you have this rebound anxiety. And when people, and maybe this is the real critical piece that we should talk about today, is that when you're drinking alcohol, you're... decision making is not the level of somebody who's not drinking alcohol. And so you tend to become more impulsive.
Right.
And so when...
and impulsiveness is not always
good.
Thing.
Sometimes it's good to be impulsive. You're like, you know, spontaneous.
Sure.
Which is great. But sometimes you make decisions without looking at the long-term ramifications of something. And that could be something like getting
drinking
into a car.
Drinking and driving.
That could be a very simple thing. It could be, you know, hey, I'm going to just start a fight I could have just walked away.
Sure.
It could be something like...
all of a sudden, not only you have liquid courage, you have liquid, like... dumb decision making.
Yeah, it could be like entering
liquid ego. You have liquid ego. It's amplified, right?
It could be entering into a relationship you should not be entering into. You know, it could
or
be
a bedroom.
Yeah, it could be that. And so lots of bad decisions happen. And when you make multiple bad decisions, it takes you down a certain pathway where bad things are happening in your life.
Yeah, and I think on top of that, when you're drinking because you wanted to feel great, now you're feeling guilty, you're making dumb decisions, you're going to feel worse. What are you going to do? Maybe drink again because you just made stupid decisions.
Yeah, that's the giving up part. We're here to tell you that you don't have to be giving up. Let's say that, hey, we want you to just become aware that there are long-term consequences.
Yes.
And part of that is just the natural thing that alcohol leads you to make, if you're drinking regularly, bad decisions, and yes. bad decisions lead to a bad outcomes.
Yes, yes.
It means the bad lifestyle, and so unhappiness.
Yes.
So I think that's the key takeaway point, is that sure, drink once in a while is not a big issue, but if it's, again, impacting your life, mm-hmm. then that's the real issue. And I want to end off with this very interesting study, which was released in 2010 by this Professor David Nutt from the UK.
And okay.
He was a very high position researcher. And what he did was he looked at the effect of all the drugs in the world. And he said he looked at the effect of alcohol, and it actually caused the most mortality compared to all the drugs
wow.
out there. So
of all the drugs available,
we're talking like heroin,
everything,
and we're talking
marijuana, cocaine, everything.
So alcohol is the number one cause
of mortality.
We call it mortality and morbidity around the world. So he was actually like, you know, nobody likes to hear that. He lost his job at the government because they didn't want to hear him say that. But that's the complete reality.
Yeah.
You know, when we look at the stats, you know, the number of car accidents that are caused, the number of broken relationships, the number of, you know, health
that's
problems.
That's true.
The number of cancer.
That's true.
Alcohol is by far number one. So it's, even though it's considered normal in our society.
Yes.
You know, it's considered like, hey, this
it sort of feels, I hear in people experience getting more flack from not drinking, and people like saying, like exactly to your point, like, oh, just have a drink, just have one. People are more encouraging because it's socially acceptable versus saying, oh, no problem. It's like there's more peer pressure to drink than there is support to not drink. So that's why I thought it would be great to have this conversation.
Yeah.
So that's the only other thing that I would say is if you know somebody that is not drinking, like support them. Don't make them feel the one that's, you know, the outcast. You don't need to drink to have a great time.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And I think that there could be substitutes we could use. I mean, there's nothing that's exactly going to be like alcohol, but.
Well, you know what? A virgin drink is the same drink without the alcohol. So the point of, oh, I want to socialize, just it's the habit of having that in your hand.
That's the psychological.
Right? It's the psychological aspect. So while everybody else is getting inebriated, you could be enjoying the same flavor. Mm-hmm. Minus the alcohol, so
yeah.
that's
again,
one
it's,
thing.
It's the strength of, like that's what I said, you know, the amount of alcohol, how often you're having
yes.
it. All of that can be under your control, yeah.
Great. Well, thank you for this discussion.
Yeah.
I know that I am very pleased with my decision to eliminate it for the next, you know, I think 75 days could end up being several months. Who knows?
Yeah, no, yeah. I think it's just part of a lifelong new habit.
Yes.
And I think for our viewers out there, I hope you really enjoyed this podcast.
Yes.
Please like the channel.
Yeah.
Subscribe to it and send us your feedback and your comments.
100%. And by the way, for some supplements that will help you overall with brain health, gut health, and anything that Peak Human has to offer in terms of overall longevity and wellness, go to peakhuman.ca. If you go to peakhuman.ca/rewards,
yep.
is that right? We have a Peak Rewards program as well that you may want to subscribe to. There's some content in there and some special discounts for all the amazing things that we've got going on. So
and most of all, you get to support us and
yeah.
you can make more videos and
absolutely. So if you have questions, comments, please, that's how we provide content. It's for you guys. So thank you. Happy New Year, and we'll see you next week.
Take care. Bye.